Spectrum Business knows that small business owners put in the work. It's unlimited hours, unlimited effort, and unlimited passion, all to unlock the unlimited potential of your business. Get fast, reliable internet, advanced Wi-Fi with Security Shield, and an unlimited mobile line, all only $49.99 a month. Learn how Spectrum Business can connect your business to unlimited possibilities at spectrum.com/business. It's your business made limitless. That's life, unlimited. That's Spectrum Business. Restrictions apply. Offer not available in all areas.
This podcast is brought to you by eHarmony, the dating app to find someone you can be yourself with. Authenticity is key in finding a relationship. That's why eHarmony doesn't allow members to copy and paste for their first messages in the app. Your conversations should reflect your uniqueness. So eHarmony is building a community of people who are also putting in the effort. It's 2025. Have conversations that actually help you and your matches get to know each other. Get who gets you on eHarmony. Sign up today.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Luke O'Neill, Professor of Biochemistry at Trinity College in Dublin. Good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Pat.
Why are sleeping tablets bad for you?
Yes, this is an interesting study, Pat, that's just come out literally last week. So it's all about your brain when you sleep. And when we've wondered for many decades, what's the purpose of sleep, right? One reason is to flush out toxins in your brain that build up during the day. And there's some evidence sleeping tablets slow down that process. So there's a kind of a concern now that they might actually allow these toxic things to build up. And now, again, it's early days, this, but it's caused a bit of an interest in what sleeping tablets do to us.
So what kind of maintenance does our brain do when it's in the sleeping mode?
There was a big breakthrough in 2012. A Danish scientist called Maiken Nørdegaard, a woman in Denmark, discovered that when you sleep, special vessels in your brain open up and they sluice out these proteins that build up during the day. So when you're out and about in your business during the day, certain proteins begin to build up and they might cause harm. And lo and behold, at night, you slush them out down these special things called glymphatics is the name they give them. And she made this discovery. And it's remarkable that since she published this in 2012, there's been over 2,000 papers on this topic. And it's a very hot part of neuroscience at the moment. Of course, the real interest is if these build up, they might cause dementia and things like Alzheimer's.
So the question might be people who develop dementia without any genetic predisposition to so do might just not be getting a good night's sleep.
Yeah, and there was evidence for this anyway, Pat, that a bad night's sleep is a risk factor for things like dementia. And again, her study then says why that might be the case. And so it seems to be a very important function of sleep is to slosh the brain out, basically, when you're sleeping, to clear out some of these things through this glymphatic system.
Now, the system can be switched on and off. Obviously, when we wake up, it's off.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So how's it switched on?
Well, that was the breakthrough, actually. They didn't quite know what was turning it on and off. And they set up a special experimental system to study this in mice initially, of course. And a thing called noradrenaline gets released. And that acts as a kind of a way to squeeze the vessels. You know, they tighten up and they release. Yeah. A pumping mechanism is triggered by noradrenaline. And every minute you release a pulse of this stuff in your brain as you're sleeping, and it squeezes and then, you know, relaxes the glymphatic system, and now it opens up and then sloshes out, as it were. You know, so that's a bit of a breakthrough, that this thing called noradrenaline is controlling the whole process.
Now, there was a study involving mice, and they used something called fiber photometry.
They did.
What's that?
Now, this is important as well, because every time we make an advance, it often means a new technique needs to be invented to study something. For example, the microscope. We wouldn't know about germs unless someone had invented the microscope to see them. So these people invent a way to image these vessels using this thing called flow fiber photometry. Now, the reason why it's important is they can image the brains of the mice all through the day and night. That previously had to restrain them in various ways and image them in a kind of a contorted way.
This is the mice new are moving way. Around.
Normally, absolutely. It's a special dye system, and you can follow these vessels opening and sloshing out the stuff. And then when the mice fall asleep, you see the opening and closing of the vessels. So it was a really good technique that they invented to study this. And then from that then, they begin wondering what was the mechanism. And lo and behold, noradrenaline is shown to be the thing that gets released to cause the pump mechanism to work. So it's a breakthrough in terms of understanding how this glymphatic system operates.
Now, does it tell us anything about the way pharmaceuticals will react with the brain?
That was the follow-on. So they knew then, let's study this in different situations, of course, and certain things will affect noradrenaline. So for example, beta blockers that you would take to regulate your blood pressure, they target noradrenaline. So the question now is, will that interfere with this process? And that might be the case. They didn't look at that specifically, but instead they looked at sleeping tablets, someone called Ambien or zolpidem is the other name for this. And that was shown to interfere with noradrenaline. And that was the link then to why sleeping tablets might be a problem in this regard.
Because they're not allowing this natural function to happen.
Absolutely.
Because they're interrupting it.
So,
and are those sleeping tablets, are they the kind of things you can buy over the counter in America, or are they more serious?
No, they're more serious.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, what they point out is it's the first time this has been shown. So more research. They aren't telling people to stop taking them, by the way, at the moment. But still, it's an important finding if it's true, because there have been studies linking overuse of sleeping tablets to a risk of dementia and Alzheimer's already.
Okay.
And this may be part of the reason. In other words, if you take a sleeping tablet as you sleep, the sluice gates aren't opening, and now these toxic proteins might build up.
So
the idea.
They did what scientists do. They take two mice, divide them into two groups. One half get the drug, the other are left alone.
They did a very good science, but exactly. And they knew, you see, that this Ambien could interfere with noradrenaline already. That was already known. And then they wonder, would it affect the sluice gates? And lo and behold, they find that this drug does interfere with that. Now, again, it's in mice, so we've got to be a bit careful. But it's the first indication that certain medications might have a deleterious effect with regard to this process in the brain.
Now, obviously, all sleep medications are doing the same thing. They're interfering with the normal neural activity of the brain.
Yeah.
So therefore, all of them will have...
That's the thing. Yeah. And they discuss this. They say, look, we need better sleep medication. Now, Pat, some people have to take sleep medication. It's a very useful thing for certain people. But these kinds of drugs that we use may have this unwanted effect. And of course, what that means is it'll trigger more research now into better ways to promote sleep, is the idea.
Now, what about age and how much sleep you actually need? Because you're hearing all the time, you know, you need somewhere between 7 and 9 hours sleep. Any more than that and you'll be kind of sleepy all day.
Yeah.
Any less than that and you'll be knackered all day. So
it varies, yeah. Some people need 4 hours and some people need 9 hours. So I get away with 5, actually, myself.
I've noticed. And are you fresh as a daisy
after
5?
Yeah, if I sleep 6 or 7 hours, I'm more tired. So I'm a person on that end of the scale. Other people need 9 or 10 hours sleep. So it's very variable. But as you get older, Pat, there's no doubt you need less sleep. And as people age, you need 4, 5, 6 hours. Where you might have needed 8, 9, 10 when you were younger. And that's interesting anyway.
And you need less REM, REM, rapid eye movement sleep.
This podcast is brought to you by eHarmony, the dating app to find someone you can be yourself with. Authenticity is key in finding a relationship. That's why eHarmony doesn't allow members to copy and paste for their first messages in the app. Your conversations should reflect your uniqueness. So eHarmony is building a community of people who are also putting in the effort. It's 2025. Have conversations that actually help you and your matches get to know each other. Get who gets you on eHarmony. Sign up today.
High Five Casino lets you play your favorite slot and live table games, like blackjack, with the chance to redeem for real cash prizes. High Five Casino has a giant selection of over 1,200 games, including hundreds of exclusive games only found on High Five Casino. It's always free to play, and free coins are given out every 4 hours. Ready to have your own High Five moment? Visit HighFiveCasino.com. That's high, the number 5, casino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. Must be 21 years or older. Terms and conditions apply.
The REM sleep doing. Do you remember when we used to divide sleep down into
different periods
in the night?
Yeah. That's when you're dreaming, of course. Now, we don't know what the function of that is.
So we don't want to dream. No, we don't need to dream.
We don't need
as much.
To dream as much, maybe. Exactly. Yeah. But remember, you still need to open the sluice gates. And one of these studies has also shown as you age, this sluice gate system gets less active in the brain as well. So in other words, as you get older, that could be a reason why some of these things are building up, then an increase in your risk of things like Alzheimer's.
Now, which is cause and which is effect? This is one of the fundamental questions. So someone said we need to be careful when implying causality.
Yeah.
Because it mightn't be the sleep meds that are causing your risk of dementia, rather the fact that you're at risk of dementia is disturbing your sleep.
You've got it. It's a great thing. Correlation does not mean causation, is what we call this, by the way. There's a correlation with sleeping medication and risk of dementia. But of course, if you take sleeping medication, it might mean you've got more depression or you're less active, whatever it might be. That could be the reason for the dementia. But then, of course, the trouble is, this would suggest that this current study that's just been reported, maybe this is the reason. There is a causative effect with the sleep medication, possibly, you know.
Text coming in. Which is worse, going 3 days without sleep or taking a sleeping tablet?
That's a good question. And as I say, sleeping tablets can be very important for some
people. You'd imagine that if you're kept awake, that eventually you can't help but fall asleep.
You'll fall asleep. Yeah, exactly. And staying awake can be very damaging, remember. And they've done studies on this as well. Sleep is a really important thing. But as I say, some people have to take meds occasionally. And by the way, infrequent use doesn't give a risk of dementia. It's only high use is where they found the link into dementia.
So unfair to be told us insomniacs shouldn't take sleeping tablets despite medical awareness of the dangers of insomnia.
Well, that's the point I'm making. These are essential meds for some people, and the message at the moment is keep taking them, but not to excess. That's the worry that this study would alert us to.
I wake up every night, says a listener in Galway, around 4 a.m. I fall asleep no problem when I go to bed around 11. Really frustrated. Has Luke any suggestions? So they're getting 5 hours sleep.
Yeah, they may just need 5 hours
get
of
up,
sleep.
Do
right?
something. Use I'll, your time.
And I'll bet they doze. Some people get the 5 hour core sleep and then they might doze a bit here, and that's good. A little bit of dozing is fine, you know. So I would advise there, it's okay to doze a bit after. Don't worry if you aren't getting the full 8. 5 might be sufficient as your core sleep, but then to doze a little bit here and there is a good thing.
I mean, parents of young babies will say, well, baby number one slept through the night. Baby number two goes to bed at 7, is awake at 11, and doesn't want to go back to sleep again at all.
That's right, exactly. Yes, it's so variable between different people.
Yeah. Does melatonin have the same effect?
That's a good question. Probably not. Yeah, they've mentioned this as well, of course. And melatonin does work for some people, remember. And that may not have this effect on this glymphatic sluice-gate mechanism. And of course, what this study does, Pat, is very important. It triggers all these questions, which is great. And what they do say is there has to be a better way to help people sleep than the current way. That's one possible bottom line.
Now, I don't know whether you saw that interview with Tony Blair or read of it where he said that people are over-medicalizing this diagnosis of depression. He said, life is challenging. It has its ups and downs. Just because you have a down doesn't mean you're depressed.
Well, exactly. Yeah, I agree with that. You've had, there has been over-medicalizing of many things, hasn't there? You know, normal life has all these things, I suppose. And what I'd say as well is you can get a good night's sleep in other ways. Good exercise, the usual things that we all know about. Don't have caffeine after lunchtime. Things. There are ways, as people know, to help them sleep at night without having to resort to some of these medication approaches.
Yeah. What about alcohol and sleep?
Well, that's bad sleep. If you fall asleep after alcohol, it's not very productive. And they're looking at the sluice gates with people and mice, of course, initially to see if the sluice gates aren't opening as much as possible. Alcohol would repress that, you see. It may make you fall asleep, but now you're not clearing out the toxins. That's a possibility that this study is also pointing towards, you know.
Okay, so it's bad sleep.
Bad sleep. It's called unproductive sleep if you have a lot of alcohol.
Imagine the mice who are going to have to do that testing.
I know, yeah, exactly, yes. They'll be reeling around the place.
There was another story in the Sunday Times last Sunday from an eminent scientist who was talking about antidepressants not working. I don't know whether you saw that.
I didn't see that, no.
Yeah, and whether, you know, the drug company is making a fortune from the prescription of these antidepressants, but that they don't necessarily work.
It's a really important point. And some of those trials often show a 5% benefit over placebo, you know, so it can be very hard to say if this has actually worked. So, some are very important for some people again, by the way.
Mm. I'm 53. Perimenopausal has driven my sleep terribly. I wake up every night between 2 and 4 a.m. Then I can't get back to sleep and I end up wrecked and start having anxiety because I can't sleep.
Yeah.
Taking Nitamel 2 milligrams, but now that's not working. Trying Fentagram now, but still need the Nitamel as I still wake up around 3. I don't know what those drugs are.
It can be tricky. People suffer from this terribly, Pat, don't they? And wakefulness and menopause is absolutely tied into this. And again, but there's things you can do if that person goes online and searches for how to help you get a good night's sleep. There are measures you can take. As I say, things like exercise seems to be important and various things. Don't nap during the day. Obvious things in a way, and it can help, you know.
Mm-hmm. There are some very boring books out there.
But that's what I do. I often do that if I wake up. I'll read one of my own books and fall asleep. But yeah, you can read a book. That can help your brain go into a different state. Yeah. And you start to feel a bit sleepy there. You know, that can be a very useful thing.
It's also worth mentioning that sleeping tablets can be highly addictive. You need more and more of them to get the same effect.
Very, very much so. They're not ideal. They're essential for some people, as I'm saying.
Yeah, and
but we need to do
why
better.
Does the therapeutic threshold rise?
You build up tolerance to everything, Pat. As you know, your body begins to handle the drug and break it down more and more. And as you go on with this, you need more drug then to have the same effects. That's a well-known thing with many drugs, really.
All right. Luke O'Neill, Professor of Biochemistry at Trinity College in Dublin. Luke, thank you very much for joining us.
The Pat Kenny Show.
With Aviva Insurance.
On News Talk.
It's time to have your high five moment with High Five Casino, the top social casino where the action and real prizes never stop. Fun spins and big wins are right at your fingertips with over 1,000 games, including High Five Casino exclusives. High Five Casino is always free to play with free coins given out every 4 hours. Sign up today for a free welcome offer that can get you spinning and winning right away. Visit highfivecasino.com.
High Five Casino.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. Must be 21 years or older. Terms and conditions apply.